Just the name Elijah gave rise to many speculations, especially even in the time of Jesus. You remember when John the Baptist was out baptizing, he came in off the wilderness. He had the Nazarite vow, he had long hair, he had the coat, the camel hair's coat and all that. He came and people wanted to know about him. Where are you? Who are you? And you see it in John chapter 1, verse 19 through 23. It says, this is the testimony of John when the Jews sent to him priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him. Well, you know, when the book of John uses the word Jews, it means Jewish authorities. It doesn't mean the average Jew. So they asked him, who are you? And he confessed, and he did not deny, but he confessed, I am not the Christ. Then they asked him, what then? Are you Elijah? Because they all knew about this prophecy, Elijah will come before the great and terrible day of the Lord. And he said, I am not. Are you the prophet? The prophet. You remember the prophet in the book of Deuteronomy? And he said, no. And they said to him, well, who are you? So that we may give an answer to those who sent us. What do you say about yourself? And he said, I am a voice of one crying in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as Isaiah the prophet said. Now he quoted Isaiah chapter 40, verse 3, which reads like this. A voice is calling, clear the way for the eternal in the wilderness, make smooth in the desert a highway for our God. Now when Jesus was on the cross, you'll remember, he's on the cross and he is there, he's suffering, it's about the ninth hour, he's right ready to die, he's close to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the ninth hour, and Jesus cried out with a loud voice, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which meant, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the people standing there, when they heard it, began saying, this man is calling for Elijah. That's what they thought. Eli, and they thought, my God, he's calling for Elijah. Immediately, one of them ran, taking a sponge, filled it with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the rest of them said, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. He's calling for Elijah. Now, after the death of John the Baptist, in the book of Luke chapter 9, verses 6 through 9, departing, they began going throughout the villages. Now, Jesus had sent his disciples, you know. This was after the death of John. Go through these villages and heal the sick and cast out demons and so on and preach the gospel and healing everywhere. Now, verse 7, now Herod the Tetrarch heard of all that was happening and he was greatly perplexed because it was said by some that John had risen from the dead. And by some that Elijah had appeared, because John the Baptist, you know, was like Elijah, I guess. And then here's Jesus' disciples going out. He gave them this power over demons and over sickness. And so they said, you know, John, Elijah must have come back. Elijah has appeared. And by others that one of the prophets had arisen. And Herod said, I myself had John beheaded, but who is this man about whom I hear such things? And he kept trying to see Jesus. In the book of Matthew, Jesus was talking to his disciples. They were up by Caesarea Philippi. That's in the northern part of Israel. It's up close to, it's now called Banias. It's an Arabic name, Banias. But it's up close to where the Jordan River starts. It's The springs come right out of the mountain there, and there's a big rock there, and the springs, if you walk up around that rock, you'll see the springs, the water comes flowing out of that mount. And they were there at Caesarea Philippi. He asked the disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? He called himself the Son of Man. They said, some say you're John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. Now, notice how these people, it's got to be some famous person, you know, it's got to be you're John the Baptist risen from the dead, or you're Elijah. So Elijah was, it's just a mysterious situation that people thought somebody was coming back. Somebody would be Elijah. And he said to them, but who do you say I am? And Simon Peter answered, you are the Christ. You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, because flesh and blood has not revealed it to you, but my Father who is in heaven. After the transfiguration in Matthew chapter 17, his disciples asked him, why then? This is Matthew 17, beginning in verse 10. His disciples said, why then do the scribes say that Elijah must come first? And he answered and he said, Elijah is coming and will restore all things. But I say unto you that Elijah already came. And they did not recognize him, but they did to him whatever they wanted. So also the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. Then his disciples understood that he had spoken to them about John the Baptist. Now you'll remember also that while John was in prison, now here John was arrested. And because he told the king, you know, you can't have that woman as your wife. You took your brother's wife. You can't have her like that. Kings do that. You say something that they don't like, you're in jail. They have a lot of power. Now, while he was in prison, he'd heard of all the works of Christ. And he sent word by his disciples to say, are you the expected one, or shall we look for someone else? So here comes John's disciples. You remember one time, John and Andrew were his disciples, and they left John the Baptist to follow Christ. But here come these disciples. Jesus answered them, and he said, go report to John what you see and hear. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, and the dead are raised. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. Blessed is he who does not take offense in me. As these were going away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. And he said, what did you go out to the wilderness to see? You went down by the wilderness. Remember, John was out there past Jericho into the area, which is, you know, desert and wilderness area. What did you go out to the wilderness to see? A reed shaken by the wind? But what did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft clothing? Those who wear soft clothing are in king's palaces. John wore the kind of clothing you have to have for outdoor life, outdoor, where you sleep under the stars, where you encounter the brush and you encounter the thorns and the thistles. What did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and one who is more than a prophet. And now Jesus is talking now about John the Baptist. John's in prison. You know, the nicest thing you could say about somebody, if you want to say something, you say the nicest things. Most of us say nice things to the person's face. Then we say bad things behind their back. But here's Jesus. He said good things behind his back. This is one about whom it is written, behold, now here's Jesus quoting, I send my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way before you. Truly I say to you, among those born of women, there has not arisen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence and violent men take it by force. For all the prophecies of the law, for all the prophets and the law are prophesied until John. And then verse 14, and if you are willing to accept it, Jesus said, John himself is Elijah who was to come. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Now for 2,000 years, people have not heard. You know, they didn't listen to Jesus. They haven't heard it. We're all, you know, who's Elijah? Somebody's Elijah. He's going to come before the great and terrible day of the Lord. Who is it? It says he is. Now, when you go back to John's birth, when you go back to the angel who came to Zechariah, his father, Zacharias. And this is what he said in Luke chapter 1. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your petition has been heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you will give him the name John. You will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth. For he," listen to this prophecy about John, "before his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. And he will drink no wine or liquor, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit while yet in his mother's womb." Wow. "And he will turn many of the sons of Israel back to the Lord their God. It is he who will go as a forerunner before him," meaning God's Messiah, "in the spirit and power of Elijah." See, John the Baptist prophesied ahead of time. He will come in the spirit and power of Elijah. And then notice what he says here. The prophecy goes on. The angel says, "to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children, and the disobedient to the attitude of the righteous, so as to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah said to the angel, "How will I know for certain? For I'm an old man, and my wife is advanced." And you remember the story that, well, you know, you won't be able to talk till this happens, till you can say it, you know, until he's born. And finally, after he was born, you know, they're asking, "Well, what's his name? What's his name? What are you going to call him? Are you going to call him after his father?" And finally, it came out of Zacharias, "His name is John." And then he could talk after that. So the name Elijah was a very powerful thing. People, you know, I've heard ministers get up. I've heard, you know, so-called leaders. This is the work of Elijah. I am Elijah. You know, somebody said, "Well, he's Elijah. He's the one that's Elijah. This guy's Elijah. Everybody's Elijah. You know, everybody wants to be Elijah." You know, isn't that crazy? Who is Elijah? Who was it? Jesus said, "And if you will accept it, John himself is Elijah who was to come." And he was going to turn, and he did. He started the turning at that time, clearing the way for Jesus Christ and the gospel of the kingdom of God and Christ's movement and the churches, and the church has gone and continued ever since. John the Baptist, fundamental to our Christianity today. Now, after Elijah was taken away in a whirlwind, we have a man who took his place. His name meant "My God saves." It was Elisha, not Elisha, something like that. It means "My God saves." Now, I want you to think of this in terms. If John the Baptist was a type of Elijah as a forerunner to Jesus, John is to Jesus what Elijah was to whom? Elisha, correct? John the Baptist was to Jesus, because John the Baptist was considered Elijah, you know, and was to Jesus as Elijah himself was to whom? Elisha. God saves, right? That would be a good analogy. So we have a man here. This man who made his home in Samaria. But let's read now 1 Kings chapter 19. I want to go back to that. 1 Kings chapter 19. Elijah called Elisha. Now here he is in chapter 19. You remember Elijah was given a commission. You're going to have changed three things. King of Syria is going to change. The king of Israel is going to change, and you're going to change. You're going out of the way, and you're going to be substituted with Elisha. And so here he is. He departed in verse 19. This is 1 Kings 19, verse 19. He departed from there, and he found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, while he was plowing with 12 pairs of oxen before him. Now, he's plowing. There are 12 pairs, and he was with the 12th. Where was he? And 11 pairs of oxen, that's 20. 12 pairs is 24 oxen. Okay, a pair of oxen is two. So he had 24 oxen. What does that say about his dad? He's the son of Shaphat. He had 24 oxen plowing. That's a lot of land, and that's a lot of plowing. And he's with the 12th pair. He's out there working. He's like a farmer. His other servants, the other servants are plowing. He had 11 pairs going ahead of him. He's with the 12th pair. I don't know if they were spread out, you know, this way in a wide swath, and they were plowing the field with, you know, using a plow, but using the oxen to do it. He was with the 12th. And Elijah passed over him, threw his mantle on him. And he knew what that meant. Elisha knew what that meant. And he left the oxen and he ran after Elijah. And he said, please let me kiss my mother and my father. Please let me kiss my mother and my father. Now, as I mentioned when we talked about Elijah the Tishbite, Elijah comes on the scene. We know nothing of his mother, nothing of his father, nothing of his family. We only know that he was a Tishbite. He came from Tishbe. And we know nothing else about him. We don't know anything about his family. We don't know anything about his brothers, sisters, whether he had any. We don't know anything about him. What we know here is that this man had a mother and a father. And he said, and he liked them. He loved them. Let me go back and kiss my mother and my father. Then I will follow you. I have obligations. I love my family. I want to go back. I want to see my family. I want to kiss them. And he said to him, this is Elijah, go back again. For what have I done to you? I don't want you to think that I've, you know, taken you away from all your family. I don't want to do that. So notice what he does in verse 21. So he returned from following him. And he took a pair, he took the pair of oxen. The pair. Which one was he? He was with the 12th pair, right? He took the pair of oxen that he was plowing with. He was out there with a servant. He was working. I mean, he was a guy who worked early. He bore the yoke in his youth. He was out there working. He was a young man. He had to be a young man because for the next 40 years or so, he's doing lots of work. So he lives through several kings. We'll talk about that later. He returned and he following him and he took a pair of oxen and he sacrificed them. And listen, he boiled their flesh with the implements of the oxen. You know, you have implements, right? Well, you got to put the, you got to put the harness on them. You got to have this, these pieces of, you know, these poles around them. And he took the implements. He took the plows, the stuff that they worked with. He burned all those wooden pieces. They weren't, you know, a lot of metal then. He took all these wooden pieces and he burned them. And he boiled them with the implements of the oxen. And he gave the meat to the people, I guess his relatives, his friends, his community where he was. And he's saying, you know, hey, I want to have this good farewell dinner. It's a goodbye dinner to all of you. I'm boiling these oxen. I'm going to go from here. I will not be back, you know. And the people ate. And after they did that, then he arose and followed Elijah and served him, ministered to him, helped him out, ministered, helped him. And you see how dedicated he was to help Elijah. Now, his house was in Samaria. And you'll see this from 2 Kings. He had a home in Samaria, but he traveled a lot. He did a lot. We'll talk about that in a minute. You'll see here, let's take a look at 2 Kings chapter 2. Beginning in verse 1 through 5. It came about when the Lord was about to take up Elijah from a whirlwind to heaven. Now, he's just about ready for Elijah to go. That Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, stay here, please, For the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel. But Elisha said, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. Dedicated, loyal. I'm not going to stay here. So they went down from Bethel. Then the sons of the prophets who were at Bethel came out to Elisha and said to him, do you know what the Lord will take away your master from over you today? And he said, yes, I know it. Be still. Just stop. Don't get all excited. Elijah's going to go. You know, your master's going to go. You're going to be left. You know, you're not going to have this. Elijah said to him, Elisha, please stay here. Stay in Bethel with them. For the Lord has sent me to Jericho. Now, here he was. He was up at Gilgal. He went down to Bethel. He went over to Jericho. You know, Jericho's down by the Dead Sea. He's going to Jericho now. And this, Elisha says again, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. I'm going to follow you wherever you're going to go. I don't care where the Lord's taking you. I'm going with you. So he does. So the sons of the prophets in verse 5, who were at Jericho, approached Elisha. You know, they don't go up to Elijah. They go up to Elisha. They say, you know, the Lord has revealed that he's going to take your master away today. And he said, I know it. Be still. Don't worry. Be still means be calm. Be peaceful. Don't get all upset. Because Elijah was a very powerful person. But you'll see here that it was Elisha who had this relationship with all these sons of the prophets. Who do they go up to? They go up to Elisha. And he was familiar with these places. And he knew them. In 2 Kings chapter 4, you'll see in verse 38, when Elisha returned to Gilgal, this is after Elijah had been taken away in the whirlwind, when Elisha returned to Gilgal, there was a famine in the land as the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. He said to his servant, put on a large pot and boil the stew for the sons of the prophets. So, you know the story. Would you believe that Elisha performed nearly twice as many miracles as Elijah himself did? Elisha had more miracles than Elijah did. And you see here, somebody said, came along with that stew in 2 Kings. I won't read it all, but you know, somebody said, oh, there's death in the pot. And he said, well, take this and throw it in there, and you're going to be fine. Throw a little salt in there. It's going to cleanse it. We're going to be okay. In chapter 6 of 2 Kings, the sons of the prophets said to Elisha, this is 2 Kings 6, verse 1. Notice that he's with the sons of the prophets. Elijah himself was more of a loner. He came on the scene, he was by himself. He came on the scene, he stood against the king. He made the statements. But Elisha is here involved with these men like disciples. They were like his disciples. And the sons of the prophets said to Elisha, behold, now the place before where we are living is too limited for us. You know, we don't have a big enough place. Well, he said, okay, well, let's go ahead and chop some trees down and build something. Somebody, you remember that story? I think it was the axe story. The axe head falls off, falls into the river. And he said, oh, master, it was a borrowed axe, you know. And he said, okay, put a stick there where the stick was. The axe head floated up on the top. He took it, put it back on, and started chopping away again. In chapter 9 of 2 Kings and verse 1, now Elisha the prophet called one of the sons of the prophets and said, gird up your loins, take this flask of oil in your hand and go to Ramoth Gilead. Take this flask of oil. He's always talking to the sons of the prophets. He had a connection with people. He had a deal with people. And in chapter 6 and verse 32, 2 Kings, chapter 6, verse 32. Now Elisha was sitting in his house. He lived in Samaria. And you'll see that the elders were sitting with him. Now we don't know if Elijah had a house or not. He was going from here to there to this to that. He ran, you know, he was scared of Jezebel, and he ran down into Jericho and into the wilderness. But here Elisha was sitting in his house, and the elders were sitting with him. And the king sent a man from his presence But before the messengers came to him, he said to the elders, do you see how this son of a murderer, this is what Elisha is saying, do you see how this son of a murderer has sent to take away my head? Look, when the messengers come, shut the door and hold the door shut against him. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him? He's just right. He's coming. He's trying to get me too. So he was in his own house. He lived in Samaria. That's where the king was. He knew the king. But apparently he traveled at times pretty far. He went all the way from Edom. He went to Moab. He went as far north as he went to Damascus. Okay. At one point he was at Damascus because it was Elisha who replaced the king of Syria, not Elijah. Elijah had the order to do these things, but Elisha carried it out. So in 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 7, then Elisha came to Damascus. Now Ben-Hadad, king of Aram, was sick, and it was told him, saying, the man of God has come here. So he went to Damascus. You see in chapter 3, I won't read that right now, but chapter 3, he was in Edom with Jehoshaphat and with Jehoram. Now, it appears that he was able to talk to people at all stations of life, from kings, from captains in the army, to widows, to the sons of the prophets, to the poor, to, you know, doesn't matter who they were, he was able to deal with them. I just want you to read this passage with me in 2 Kings chapter 4, beginning in verse 11. One day he came there, and turned into the upper chamber and rested. Then he said to Gehazi, his servant. Now evidently, Gehazi was the same guy who was with Elijah. They had the same servant. He stayed with Elisha. He was the one that kept running up the top of the mountain, look over. He said, do you see anything? No, I don't see anything. Come back down. Well, go back up again. 7 times he ran up there. I don't see anything. He finally said, you know, I see a little cloud about the size of a man's hand. And Elijah said, I know. I know this. I know what's going to happen. Now we're going to have rain. Now we're going to have rain. But one day there came, he sent his servant, and he says, call this Shunammite. This Shunammite woman. And when he had called her, she stood before him. Call this Shunammite woman. He said to her, Say now to her, behold, you have been careful for us. You've helped us out. You've done some good deeds for us. And you've been careful for us with all this care. What can I do for you? You've done something for me. What can I do for you? Now, I want you to notice the next words. Would you be spoken for to the king? Would you like me to speak for you to the king? Or to the captain of the army? And she said, I live among my people. So he said, well, what then is to be done for her? What can I do for you? And Gehazi answered and said, truly she has no son. So Gehazi had gone there. He delivered the message. And so Elisha is talking to Gehazi. Well, what does she want? She's truly she has no son and her husband is old. He said, call her. And when he called her, she stood in the doorway. And he said, at this season next year, you will embrace a son. And she said, no, my Lord, oh, man of God, do not lie to me, your maidservant. No, don't get my hopes up. Don't lie to me. Don't get my hopes up. And verse 17, the woman conceived and bore a son at that season next year, as Elisha had said to her. She's going to have a son. Well, he was bald. We know that, right? From 2 Kings 2 and verse 23, because he was walking along and a bunch of young guys, you know, young teens and smart alecks said, go up, you old bald head. I guess baldness in the Middle East was rare. They didn't have it a lot, you know, because he was bald. Elijah had a lot of hair. He was a hairy man, right? The Bible says he was a hairy man. And Elisha, bald. And so He walked with a staff. We know that from 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. Then he said to Gehazi, "Gird up your loins and take my staff in your hand and go your way." A staff. He had a staff. He walked with a staff. He evidently dressed in rather ordinary clothing, because in 2 Kings chapter 2, verses 12 through 14, after the mantle fell from Elijah, it says, Elisha saw it and he cried out, "My father, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." And he saw Elijah no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and he tore them into pieces. He also took up the mantle of Elijah that fell from him and returned and stood by the bank of the Jordan. Ordinary clothing, nothing much. He just tore it all up. It appeared that he was not afraid of anybody, because in 2 Kings chapter 3, I mentioned this is where he went to Edom. He is down in Edom. Here, there's going to be war. The king of Israel, now replaced by Ahab, was replaced by his son Jehoram. Jehoram meant God, Yahweh is praised. Yahweh is praised. Which was a total false name, because he was a scoundrel. He listened to his mother Jezebel. He followed in all the ways of Jezebel. He didn't do one thing to change the worship of the Baals. He didn't do a thing. And so here he was, Jehoram. And this is the interesting statement. I want you to read this with me in 2 Kings chapter 3, verses 13 through 15. "Now Elisha said to the king of Israel," that's Jehoram now, "What do I have to do with you? Go to the prophets of your father and the prophets of your mother," that's Jezebel and Ahab. "And the king of Israel said to him, 'No, for the Lord has called these three kings together to give them into the hand of Moab.' Elisha said, 'As the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand, were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat," now Jehoshaphat was there too, "was it not for that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look at you nor see you." I wouldn't even look at you. Now that's pretty rough talk. Elisha, a nice guy, you know, he's a farmer kind of guy. But his father was prosperous. He left a prosperous life. You know that. He had things coming his way. I mean, he's going to be, 12 pair of oxen out there. His father was fairly well-to-do in the world of Israel at that time. But here he was, and he snaps. He says that right off the bat, you know. And he's talking to the king of Israel, you know, talking to him. And he is, where was his house? In Samaria, right there, we're in the capital of Israel. And he says, you know, if it weren't for Jehoshaphat being here, I wouldn't even look at you or see you. Because I'm sure he thought, your name is nothing but a falsehood. Your name is nothing but a crock here. You know, it's nothing. Your name doesn't mean what it says, because you're out here promoting the worship of the Baals. You, Jehoram. And on another occasion, his ministry reached pretty far and wide, you know. You remember after Syria invaded Israel, they captured a lot of people. And in one swoop there, they took this young woman. She was a little young girl, maid, and they had her work at Naaman's house. Naaman was the captain general of the Syrian army, and Naaman was there, but he had leprosy. He had some leprosy on his body, and the maid liked him, like, evidently, and he treated her well. And she said, you know, I just wish you could go to the prophet that's in Israel. That prophet could help you, you know. He could cure you of this. He really? So Naaman goes to the king of Syria, sends a letter to the king of Israel. Can we come down and make all the motions and all the, you know, diplomatic relations and all that? He would like to see the prophet in Israel. Okay, well, fine. Don't pick on me if he's not healed. I don't want a war, you know, just because you're going to start, you know, use something to start a war with me. So here comes Naaman. Now, Naaman travels. Naaman's got all these gifts. He wants to give all these gifts to Elisha, you know. Oh, you're going to do me a favor, I'm going to do you a favor. You got all these gifts. And he drives up in his chariot, all the attendants with him, and Elisha sends a messenger to him. Just go out, I know he's there, just go out and tell him, go wash 7 times in the Jordan and your flesh will be restored to you and you will be clean. But Naaman hears this. He's standing out there, all his entourage, all his stuff. And the prophet doesn't even come out to see him. Dismisses it. It's a little bitty thing. Go wash 7 times in the Jordan. And Naaman gets furious. He's mad, furious. And he went away. Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. I thought he would, you know, give a display. Here he just dismisses me with go dip 7 times in the Jordan. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the rivers of Israel? Israel never, you only had one river. It was Jordan. It was not even a big river, you know. Aren't they better and bigger than the rivers? Could I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned away in a rage. He's going to go away. But Elisha didn't care. Here's the thing. Do it or not do it. Dip 7 times in the Jordan. I'm not here to cater to you. So he did not fear a king, a captain. It didn't matter who you were. Elisha continued to serve God in the same way that Elijah had done. Now, there was a difference between them. Elijah was a man whose mission was to accuse of sin. He came in and said, you are doing wrong, you're doing evil. And to bring judgment upon men because of it, because they did sin. Elisha, while defending the true religion in the same way that Elijah did, came as more of a healer. His miracles were those of restoring to life. Increasing, for instance, you see, he increases the widow's oil. He makes pure the bitter waters. He does other things that restore. There were tender sympathies for his friends, if you remember, you know, and for his family. He had tears for his country when he stood and looked at Hazael, the new captain who's going to be, his captain, a general who was going to take over Syria, and he looked at him, and then Elisha started crying. His tears started coming to his face, and the guy said, well, what's wrong? Why are you crying? He said, I know what you're going to do. I know the trouble you're going to cause to Israel. I know what you're going to do to them. And so he had tears for his country. He was firm. There was a firmness in maintaining what was right. There was a sternness of judgment and a seeming forgetfulness of himself. He just was not concerned about himself or who he was. He was just serving. His location, Elisha lived in a town called Abel Mehola. Now, we don't know where that is. There are several speculations. Some say it's on the east side of the Jordan, close to Tishbe, and others say it's located on the west side of the Jordan, but we don't know. It's only mentioned 3 times in Scripture. It's mentioned in 1 Kings 4:12, and also in Judges chapter 7, verse 22. Now, in Judges 7, verse 22, of all those references, Judges 7 talks about this town. This is the town where Gideon defeated the armies of the Midianites. In Judges 7, verse 22, it was in Abel Meholath. And Elisha's name was called My God Saves. That's his name. My God saves. Or you could say, my God is salvation. A very fitting place. Nice to come from a town. You know, you come from the same town where Gideon, showing the power of God with only his 300 warriors, his 300 men, defeat the entire Midianite army. And then he says, here's his name. My God saves. His name was Elisha. We'll talk more about him in our next sermon.